Hey, welcome to Show People on the 10th Voice. I'm Michael Graeman Parkhurst, and we are here to celebrate LGBTQ theater artists and allies, both here in Kansas City and around the country. I am joined today by our fantastic engineer, Kate Redman.
Hi, Kate. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Nice. It's nice to have you here. This is only our second time working together.
Yes, it is. Only the second time. I'm not as nervous this month as I was last month.
You did great last month, so I'm glad. And this beautiful Saturday today. I love it. I am so excited to be chatting in studio with my dear friend Anne Tolpagan, who is currently playing Mother Superior in Sister Act the Musical at Starlight.
Yes.
Welcome to Kansas City, Anne.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. And you are having gorgeous weather.
It's been really good for you, because I didn't know. And we were thinking like 100, and then with you on the stage.
I was worried. We were a little worried about traipsing around on an outdoor stage with Nen habits in 95-degree weather, but happily that did not happen.
You know, when my husband worked there years ago, they didn't have air conditioning. So at least they have like the closed
air. They have the mega wall. I think it's called the mega wall or something like that, and they bring it down so it keeps it all cool for us backstage until they have to lift it up.
Right.
So it's nice. I did meet Bob the Bat last night. Bob the Bat flew over the nuns' heads and did a little flippy poo. And I'm thinking nuns, you know how sensitive they are obviously to like anything sonar, you know, sound, whatever. This bat must have been going out of its mind.
Just so like, nobody warned you about the bat.
We were warned about the bat, but I some people were a little freaked out, but I was more intrigued and really wanted to see it. So I finally got my first glimpse.
I remember when it flew down really close. I think Bob the Bat shows up at every show.
He probably has a little cameo that, that he enjoys. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How's the week been going at Starlight for you?
It's been great. It's been really wonderful. First of all, the audiences are fantastic. They're very warm. They're very inviting, and everybody's been lovely. It's a very different thing than performing inside a standard theater where you have walls on all sides. It's different in terms of sound. It's different in terms of light, and it's different in terms just of what we call the fourth wall. You know, the audience energy that we get, it doesn't quite come back at us. It sort of dissipates up into the heavens, which is something you just have to trust and know that, you know, when you hear slight laughter and everything, you think, oh, okay, all right, they're with us, and trust that it's the same amount of energy that we're getting when we're inside, like at Pittsburgh CLO, inside that the Benedum Center,
right,
where we got a ton of really instant sound feedback from the fourth wall from the audience. So, but it is, and it's also kind of funny because at Starlight, people can have popcorn and drinks and things like that. So it's a little bit like you're doing theater, like at a ballpark.
It is because they're, and then when you come back from intermission, there's still people
are like,
on the side, they're still coming back, excuse me,
right,
and, you know, dropping things.
I said, am I going to see somebody like hawking beer being like, get your Bud Light?
Cotton I feel like, candy, get your Bud Light.
Mother Superior would like a Bud Light, please.
Right now. I know.
Right now. No, it's been wonderful and it's been beautiful. And just to see the sun setting while we're singing some of our things, and especially for my character who's talking a lot about God and faith and everything, it's really a lovely backdrop for us.
Had you played in amphitheater before?
Yes, I did Ragtime outside of D.C. at Wolf Trap.
Wolf Trap, oh,
yeah.
Ooh, nice,
yeah.
Okay.
But I think that's kind of it for outdoor things, yeah.
So you said that you talked about the Benedum. This is a co-production with Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera.
That's right. That's right. And it originally was going to go out in 2020 and do a couple other city stops. So like a little mini tour. And then it changed, obviously, because of the pandemic. They brought it back for this season and just kept it as a co-pro between PCLO and Starlight.
And how interesting, again, going back, going from the Benedum Center to Starlight, did they tell you about some of the challenges you're going to face? Did they kind of like give you a warning? It's going to be different.
Yeah, we knew a bit. They said, okay, it's out. First of all, some people didn't know it was outdoors. So everybody was like, oh, okay, it's outdoors.
Oh,
there's that. But we knew about that. We knew to prepare for weather. We knew to prepare for some sound issues. The other thing that you get there is a real reverb and a real kickback when you're singing.
Yeah.
So you can hear yourself. So you have to really put your ego aside and go, don't listen to yourself. Let's just keep going and stay in the present moment. So, but we knew in advance and people were fairly ready. That first night was a bit, you know, it was a bit tricky, but we figured it all out.
Right, you just made that adjustment.
Sorry, first
quickly.
Night people. Sorry.
They loved it. Sister Act, this is the first time I saw it last night. And it's a really good show for Starlight audience. Kate, you saw it, didn't you, this week?
Yeah, I saw it Thursday night.
It's fun.
It was a great show. It was really, really a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's a great book. It's a great, it's Alan Menken music, which just puts these great earwigs in your ear. Like it's, even if you don't know the music, you come out humming it because it's so, it just sticks with you and it's just great, you know. Sorry, sorry to interrupt you, Kate.
You didn't interrupt me at all.
No, it was, again, because I had never seen it before. I was like, this is actually, it's really,
it's
really
lovely.
Good.
Yeah. And it's a great message. And it's just, I keep saying to people, it's just joyful. It's a joyful show. And it, it's very, it, the message is inclusivity and understanding and accepting people's differences. And also specifically within, when it comes to like religion or that kind of thing, understanding that faith and the concept of God can be kind of seen in all different walks of life.
Yes.
For some people, God is in music and song. And for some people, God is in scripture or it's in, you know, friendships or the countryside or whatever. So it's like my character says at the end, you know, maybe we'll realize that these are, that it's both singing and prayer are the same thing and they are the same thing and God is sort of everywhere. So it's a lovely message to people, and it just, we hopefully we're making people laugh all the way through.
And you are. I think that that concept is highlighted even more in the musical than it was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The idea,
I do. Oh,
the idea of all that.
Yeah, I do too.
So, who's playing? Tell us a little about who's playing Dolores, starring opposite you.
Tamira Gray, Tamira Gray. She's incredible. She is. I'm going to sound like that idiot who just like boosts everybody that they're working with, but she is lovely. She was in the, you might remember her from the first season of American Idol.
That's right.
And she is a just a beautiful human inside and out. She tackles this show, which we had, you know, 6 days of rehearsal for or something, very fast, the process, with just joy. Again, there's that word, joy and like dedication. And if there's any little blip that any of us go through, it just doesn't bother her. She just shakes it off. It's like, whatever. She brings a real grounded sense of, you know, family, and we can get through this. And her family's actually here with her while we're doing this.
Oh, really?
Which is lovely. Yeah.
Oh,
so her family's here, which has been great. And then of course, anytime you're in a show that does any kind of a little tour or a jump, we become like our own little family. And but Tamira's lovely. Her voice is insane and she's so funny and it's just been a joy to work with her. She's great.
And the whole process was pretty short, wasn't it?
It was very short, Michael, yes. We got to Pittsburgh last, I don't even know what month it is, what year it is.
Right.
Last week.
Okay.
No, 2 weeks ago we started. So we had our complete arc is 3 weeks.
Right.
We had 6 days essentially of rehearsal in Pittsburgh. Then we opened in Pittsburgh and ran for a week there. Then we flew on our quote-unquote day off. On Monday and got here to Kansas City and opened Tuesday night. So it's very fast. And when that happens, a lot of what we, like the show is very different, how we're going to close Sunday night than our first opening in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
It's already had lots of different iterations and changes and things. And so it sort of evolves with us.
It is incredible when you have such a short rehearsal period and short, you know, performance weeks too. You are all very well connected. I think the chemistry is one. It's a great cast.
It's
the
great cast, top to bottom. We have a great group, and we have a great music director, and we have a great band and crew. Our crew is incredible. The crew in Pittsburgh was fantastic. Some of them came over with us.
Okay.
And the crew in Kansas City at Starlight has been fantastic as well. And that's, you know, that doesn't quite ever get enough of a shout out, in my opinion.
No.
We could never, ever do what we do on stage without all these people behind the scenes who are phenomenal and really help us feel safe. Like we can do, even when Bob the Bat is flying
over. Yeah.
We feel safe.
I'm surprised they don't introduce you to Bob the Bat when you get here too. No, yeah, that's the people at Starlight can turn around the show so well.
They've been
so wonderful. So first of all, you are fantastic in this role.
I had no idea.
I mean, you remember the Mother Superior in the movie.
It was Judy Dench.
Maggie, or
Maggie Smith.
Was it Maggie?
I love Judy Dench, so I always just throw her name out there. It was Maggie Smith, also a dame.
And again, I think as it's written in the musical, there's more levels there. It's a really good role. It gives you so much time to shine. There's a number in the second act called "I Haven't Got a Prayer."
Yes.
And you're like alone in a space.
Yeah.
Having your conversation with God. Are you willing to share a little bit what Mother Superior is going through in that number and maybe even your journey with that?
Sure. Yeah. You know, she's been in charge of a church that is not really doing well fiscally. They don't have a lot of parishioners who are attending church. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of one of her first lines that she gets out is, there will be so few people in church this evening, who will even notice how poorly they sing? And all her beautiful nuns are just not really connecting to their inner singer and are singing quite, quite badly. And so she's feeling a level of panic and despair and everything about her church and how it's functioning. Mm. You know, her role is to help people find the church and enter the church and worship in the church. I'm not sure that this is, you know, she's a very flawed character. She's a wonderful flawed character, which are the best characters to play. She thinks that people should just be there and be praying and that's it, and recognize God's authority and power and mm-hmm. all that, and that's it. And for her journey in the show, Dolores is able to open her eyes to a different way of finding expressing, God or expressing yeah. faith or sisterhood. And so anyway, as Dolores joins the, for people who might not know, Dolores joins the nunnery to hide out from someone who's a bad guy who's trying to get her. And so this is against Mother Superior's wishes, but she follows her Monsignor's orders, who's above her in the hierarchy. And so when Dolores comes in, she shakes things up and she teaches the nuns how to sing kind of crazy and like yes, soul, with soul and everything. Yes. And it's very shocking to Mother Superior. And she is continually afraid that what she has devoted her life to is falling apart and is no longer really being taken seriously. And what happens on the flip side is that the people start flooding the church because they love the music and they're having a good time with God versus like being afraid or, right. you know. So in that song, she, I believe, is going through this crisis of, I don't know how to fix this at all. I haven't got a clue of how to stop this moving machine that's happening inside the church
right
now.
You're still by yourself, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she also feels as though she hasn't, she kind of starts to realize she hasn't ever had a prayer. And so there's a whole bunch of back work that actors will do with parts that I actually did with our wonderful director, Amina Kaplan, who's lovely. She was like, let's talk about, you know, what this, what the character, what her backstory is. So she's not just sort of a nun. And so just shortly, I came up with a whole sort of backstory that was like how things that she had faith, why she entered the sisterhood, all of that. So
great.
Basically, she felt like her faith was slipping anyway. And then this woman comes in and changes everything. So that song is her cry out for help. And then,
what do you mean slipping?
Like that she wasn't sure really if God was still there. Hmm. She wasn't hearing any answers to her prayers.
Okay.
She repeatedly says through the show, like, God, please give me a sign. Tell me what's happening. Show me what you need. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't feel that connection. And it takes this woman coming back in and sort of invigorating her, the sisters, all the nuns, and her realizing that it's something that she can find in other ways.
And you express that so much in that number. And it's true. Your journey, your arc is beautiful.
It's a big journey.
But you're so protective of your sisters, too, of the sisters
very,
that are there. And that's so clear.
Yeah, she wants to make sure that they are okay, that they're still in, you know, safe in their spirituality and mm-hmm. safe in their physical being as well. And so that's sort of first and foremost for her. And she's terrified that just, you know, she says, I've got several transvestites and a handful of Jews. And it's very funny.
Right.
But she doesn't understand that. And this is, you know, how she's flawed in thinking that like only a certain kind of person mm-hmm. would come to a church.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in reality, you want everyone to come in and find
right.
their peace and their spirituality and their center and everything. And then she thinks she finds that, or she starts to find that at the end of the show.
And that's the lesson, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're so funny. It's perfect role for you.
She has some great one-liners.
Perfect role for you. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with Ann Tolpagan. And welcome back to Show People, and I'm here with our guest, Ann Tolpagan, today, who is finishing up her run at Starlight. You've got, what is it, Saturday?
Today's Saturday.
Closing tomorrow night.
Tomorrow. It's so fast. But yeah, if anybody has a chance to come out tonight or tomorrow, tonight we might be sold out, I'm not sure, but or tomorrow, it's just such a wonderful show. It's really fun. And I think it's great for all, you know, pretty much all ages. The only thing we give a heads up for is that we have gunshots sounds in the show, because in the nature of our world that we live in now, we don't want people to be actually frightened. We want them to understand this is happening in the show. So it's not giving anything away, but it's just a heads up.
I remember you telling me, because we brought our 5-year-old Sammy last night, and I remember you giving us a heads up saying there's just the gunshot. And,
yeah, you just want to prepare people, because sadly in today's times, you don't want anybody to think something bad is actually happening. So nothing bad is happening. Good musical theater is happening.
It is, and it is. Really great. Yeah. It was wonderful night. Wonderful night.
Thank you.
You were born and raised in San Francisco.
Yes,
right?
I was in the 70s. Yeah.
In the 70s.
In the 70s, which was, I say that because it was a very different city than it is now. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a wonderful, colorful, fabulous place to grow up. It was great.
It is a wonderful city. And obviously going through some changes right now. But
not all bad changes, but it's just different. It's just a different city than it used to be. And anyway. So.
Did you grow up? I can't remember. You grew up right in the city.
I grew up
city,
in the city proper. I went to Convent of the Sacred Heart initially.
You did.
So I did actually a little Catholic school myself. And then I transferred to Catherine Delmar Burke's school, which was a private girls' school just a couple blocks from my house, actually.
Was that also Catholic school?
It was not.
No, okay.
And then at the time, San Francisco didn't have the strongest public school foundation, and my parents were able to put us into private school, and they were happy to do that, which was nice for us. But I think it's changed a bit in San Francisco as well with that. But so then I also went to University High School in San Francisco, which was really my big, that's where I really learned how to sing and act, and sort of jumped into that world. And I had some incredible teachers. Lorna Strand was my acting teacher, and Bruce Lamott was my singing. He was basically our head of our choir, and that's where I learned how to sing. Was in a choir, which is a great place to learn, because you learn how to listen and how to blend and how to sort of create a sound instead of just thinking about your own voice.
I know, and I was lucky that I got to meet. I think I got to meet both your parents.
Yeah,
but I think I met your mom several more times. I know you recently lost your mom and your dad not too many years ago.
Five years ago. Yeah.
They were great.
Yeah, I remember. Thank you. Really, really thanks, Michael.
How instrumental were they in seeing your love of theater art in you, and like from the very, very start?
Yes.
Leading you in that.
My mom would swear that I wanted to be called Cindy and be a farmer until I was about 3. That was it. I was like, I shall be a farmer named Cindy. And don't quite know where that came from or where it went. But after that, the story in our family is that my parents were big opera lovers, and they were subscribers to the San Francisco Opera.
Sure.
And my grandfather came over from Russia and was sort of hit out on a boat and came to Seattle, was discovered playing the violin on the street, started playing with the Seattle Symphony, and then moved down to San Francisco and started playing with the San Francisco Symphony. So we had music in our family, like for generations. My parents were playing the opera one day, and while they were sort of outdoors in the garden, you know, doing stuff, and I was sitting at the piano and I was matching pitch with just hearing whatever was being sung, and I was hitting the note and finding the note on the piano.
How old do you think you were?
I was probably about 4 or 5.
Okay. Yeah.
And my brother came in and notoriously was like, I'm telling. Like, I was doing something wrong. So he went and got my parents, and they came in and said, okay, clearly we need to do some piano lessons. So I took piano from like age 5 to 18 with the same instructor. So,
I was
really into classical piano for a long time.
I don't think I knew that. Okay.
Yeah. Little secrets we don't know about each other. Yeah. Right? So I played piano for a long time, and then started singing kind of like 6th, 7th grade kind of thing, and then into high school as well. But my parents were very supportive of, they had me at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music.
Okay.
Like, I played the triangle. Mm-hmm. That was my real big, my debut. And then playing piano and piano lessons for my whole life as a child. And then they knew I wanted to go to University High School, which is where my brother went as well. But I had seen a production of Oklahoma there, and my heart just exploded.
Okay.
And I said, well, I have to go do that. So they were great. And then they supported me all the way through going to Northwestern, leaving California and going to Chicago to study there.
God.
And I studied theater in Chicago and at Northwestern. And then I stayed in Chicago for about 5 years after that. And then I moved to New York after that. But they were incredibly supportive all the way through. I will say, you know, to not paint them as like perfect angels, although they now are my perfect angels. They did struggle with the business itself. Hmm. Like, it was very hard for them to see me not, you know, not booking jobs or not getting the thing I wanted to do. That was like a heartbreak for them. And it was really hard. I remember one time my dad said, when we were doing Mamma Mia, he said, honey, why don't you just tell them you'd like to transfer to New York? And I was like, oh, okay, dad, I'll just tell them I want to transfer.
Right. Seems logical.
Right. In the business world, yes, it was sort of a different thing. And I think it was hard for them to understand that for me as an artist, it was also hard for me, but I kind of accepted it because my love of it is so complete. Mm. And this is what I say to anybody who's joining the industry or starting out, is that as you go along, check in with yourself and make sure you're still in love with what you're doing. Right. Because if you're not in love with it completely, it's not worth all the sacrifices you have to make.
We always tell people it's hard. It's very great. Hard. And you know when someone's supposed to be doing it, but you always want to let people know you're going to be doing other things. You're going to be auditioning more than you're going to be actually in a show.
Absolutely.
Performing and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
So did University High School, it wasn't a performing arts school.
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
It's a small private school. It's getting bigger now, but it was started in 1973 by some lovely people. And it's a wonderful school that just very much felt like they wanted to focus on not just science and math and history and English and everything, but really the arts as well. So we had a killer choir and camerata and a band. We had a jazz band. We had just a lot of great things. And they still to this day continue and have a really strong arts program there. But it's not only an arts school.
Yeah. What was the first show you did there? Do you remember doing...
I feel like... Okay, this is funny. I think the first show I did there was the play of Sweeney Todd.
Oh.
Which is ironic because the musical of Sweeney Todd is where I met my husband.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
So, I think it was the play of Sweeney Todd. That was the first one. And then I did Mikado.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We did Mikado and Look Homeward, Angel, a play. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
And then I played Dorothy in The Wiz. They were early on in like colorblind casting. I was Dorothy in The Wiz, which was hilarious, but really wonderful and just a great, you know, so yeah, university was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at some point you said, you heard of Northwestern University.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew that I wanted to leave California to try something else out, which was hard for my parents also, but I didn't want to go to LA. I wanted to try something else out. And so I looked at Northwestern. I looked at Carnegie Mellon. Mm-hmm. I didn't look at CCM, which is funny. I didn't even really... I think it wasn't on my radar so much.
Maybe people... the time, maybe in California.
But so... I ended up with Chicago, which was my first choice. I actually applied early and found out early. So I was like, you know, sitting back pretty in my
great
senior year. But I swear to God, I couldn't get in now. Like, these schools are so hard to get into.
Even with the most perfect scores and perfect grades,
And I also would like to just make a little plug for a concept that people always say, oh gosh, you know, should I go to this school or this school to get into the theater and acting? I don't think it matters. I think if you go to a place that has a good theater program, period, it doesn't have to have a name, quote unquote, as a theater school. I know so many spectacular, successful performers who didn't go to one of the quote unquote top five schools. Mm-hmm. So I hope that any listener listening to this isn't, you know, they can pass that on to people and just say, don't freak out about that. Just go someplace where you know they have a good program that's excited about teaching and learning and stuff.
I love that. I completely agree. There are so many programs out there and so many people that have worked in New York and regionally that are now teaching at those programs. So there's a lot of, you know, professional faculty that are still working in the business.
Absolutely. And
that's great. Yeah. I was a cherub.
I see now. I didn't get accepted into the cherub program. I went to Boston University Theater Institute.
Okay.
That was my summer experience.
I remember that one.
And
too.
I remember being like, how dare they not accept
what
me?
What are
like,
you kidding me?
I'm going to Boston.
And I would have never tried Northwestern after that because I was like, that's not. I went to Boston Conservatory for college, but I would have never tried Northwestern. It was a great experience, but I'm like, I'm not going to get into Northwestern University. So
I loved Northwestern also because I studied French pretty seriously and some art history. And I was excited about getting a Bachelor of Science degree with it. because I feel like actors study the human condition so much that I kind of wanted to have my fingers in all fields to grab from for creating characters and stuff.
That's great. So. I'm sure your parents probably like that too.
Oh, they loved it. Yeah, they loved, and they loved. We had very close family friends who were in Chicago. One of my parents, you know, just very close family friends, my godmother kind of thing, and so that was. They were happy that we had close connectors there.
Yeah,
in Chicago, and Chicago is such a fantastic city.
It is a great city.
My nephew is at University of Chicago now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's kind of fun to know that the Chicago tradition carries on in our family.
Mm-hmm. I remember. The faculty of chair program was so incredible and so inspiring. You know, we're all like in between our junior and senior and high school, and they keep us busy. And mm-hmm. we're like, it's like going to like military. They just sort of, you know, work us out like crazy. But Mary Poole.
Yes.
I remember just being completely inspired. And I think she was pretty new. I was 1990.
Yeah.
Chair, but I think she was pretty new. But I think, you know, I remember
thinking.
She just
retired. I feel like she just retired a couple of years ago. Mm. She was lovely. Mary Poole and I did a show. I didn't really get to know her. I didn't work with her at Northwestern too much.
Okay.
I worked with Ann Woodworth. She was my teacher.
Okay.
And Mary Poole did a Lost in Yonkers production at the Wagon Wheel Theater in Warsaw, Indiana, set little summer stock.
Okay.
That's where I got my equity card and everything. And I was in that show with her. And I think, I mean, nothing against Ann or anything. I think Mary Poole taught me more in that one show of how to be a professional actor, how to everything, like sort of the business side of acting. She's incredible. She's an incredible woman and an incredible teacher. And so anyway.
Did you go home in between your university years?
Yeah. I went, right after, actually right in between, okay, well, speak in. In my summers at Northwestern, I went back the first couple summers and did like day camp counselor stuff. Uh-huh. Like, just completely didn't do anything theater. The kids today are so like, they're gunning for professional jobs so early on. And I was like, I got a lot of time. I'm fine.
Good.
But after I graduated from Northwestern, I did Into the Woods at Northwestern, like a summer show there. And then I did at the Kahn Auditorium, which is this beautiful auditorium on the Evanston campus there.
Okay.
I did Into the Woods, and then I went back to San Francisco, and I was like, I'm just going to hang out here for a while, because I was like terrified of going to New York.
Right.
And Chicago was fun, but I really missed California. So I was like, I'm going back to San Francisco. I worked for my next door neighbor, who was like, I think you need a job, kid. Like, you need a... And my parents were like, please. He was a nephrologist. So that's a kidney specialist, in case people don't know.
Okay.
So I worked for a nephrologist for a year. And randomly...
Just in his office.
Like, just assisting.
Okay.
And then I auditioned for Vinnie Liff, who was part of Johnson Liff, which was a big casting agency for a while. Sort of the big wigs. And I walked into the room and I sang for him. And he looked at me and he said, why are you here? And I flat out lied. I was like, oh, my father's ill and I have to be... Like, I just was like... I knew I had to be like in Chicago or New York or someplace, and I was just afraid.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. He goes, I completely respect that you're staying with your father. Sorry, Dad.
You're like, I just graduated not too long ago, you know.
And he gave me his card, and he said, when you come to New York City, you come to my office, you walk right in and you give them this card, and they know that means I want to have like 5 minutes with you. This was like unbelievable.
They were auditioning in
They were
in
auditioning.
San Francisco?
I was auditioning for Phantom.
Okay.
And it was for like a tour or something. They were doing sort of their out of town, because they just do some jumps around the country to do auditions. So
I love that.
When I finally went back to New York, it was like a couple years later, because I went to Chicago first, and I was in New York, and I went to Johnson Lift's office. Sure enough, walked right in, and I said, I got this card from Vinny and they said, yeah, give us a couple minutes. And I sat down and they said, okay, he can see you now. And I went back and I talked to him for 5 minutes, and he's like, here's what you need to do. Like, get your headshots and your resumes and do all this and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, and I'll see you out at the auditions. And like, he took my information that I had, my like little resume I had and everything. And he said, we'll call you. And sure enough, they started calling me. I mean, this man was he has since passed for a while now. And he was just a glorious, wonderful angel who helped people get started in the business early on. So, but just such a long answer to your question. I was in San Francisco for about a year, and then I went back to Chicago for 5 years and started working there, just in any of the theaters around town.
Like, were you trying to, did you ever have a decision where you're like saying, I want to do musical theater versus...
No.
Straight acting roles? Or were you just kind of like,
I wanted to do musical theater. Okay. Like, I was really, now I'm more like, I do theater, TV, and musical theater.
Yeah.
But I was really gunning for musical theater then. And I don't think it was fear that kept me away from New York as mm-hmm. much as opportunity. I thought, I've got Northwestern on my resume. Mm-hmm. I'm in Chicago. I'm going to have a lot of people who can help me sort of network out. And that's what I first started doing. I just started doing shows at like Marriott. Well, actually, I've never worked at Marriott Lincolnshire. Small fact.
And they do a lot of musicals.
They do a ton of musicals, yeah. Marriott, right. But I did Drury Lane, Oakbrook, and just a whole bunch of theaters around town that was wonderful. And then I moved to New York, moved into an apartment, like all my furniture on the fifth floor walk-up, got a job at a hotel in reception, yeah. and was like, okay, I'm starting. Yeah. And that same casting agency, Johnson Lift, cast me in the tour of Les Mis, like, 2 weeks later. So I had to quit my job, move all my mm-hmm. stuff into storage, get somebody to move into my apartment, and then I was out on the road.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what people are constantly doing. And then, you know, coming back and audition again. Was Les Miserables on your radar? Was that like, even when you were in Chicago,
massively.
Were you kind of like, that's a role? That's a show for me.
To not make this too long, but so when I was in high school, I was lucky enough to have traveled to Europe, and I had gone and I lived with a family in France for part of the summer to just sort of like do a deep immersion language thing. So on the way back from that, from France, I went up to London and I met my parents and my brother, and we went to go see a couple shows. And mm-hmm. my dad was like, I'm going to get some tickets. And he goes, I've got this musical Chess that's by the group ABBA, who we were like huge fans of, yes. which is a funny other little story for us. But so Chess, and then he was like, and a musical based on the Victor Hugo novel, Les Miserables. And I was like, well, that's going to be crap. That sounds horrible. And, you know, anyway, that musical changed my life. Sitting in that theater changed my life. It took me just very solidly in the direction of where my life would become. Uh-huh. So then I, you know, fast forward to many years later, I'm auditioning for Les Mis. I get Les Mis. I'm out on the tour. We do a year on the road, just different places, and then we ended up going to Toronto for 6 months because Colm Wilkinson, who was the original Valjean in London and Broadway, was living there now, or then, still now. And so he was going to join our company for 6 months and do it in Toronto. So I got to do Les Mis with Colm Wilkinson
in Toronto
all those years later. And when I left that company, I left at the end of Toronto, and we have, you know, at like...
How long were you with Les Mis there during the time?
The tour was a year and a half, and then I was on Broadway for the following year.
Right, okay.
When I left that company, Colm would always go at intermission and do a quick cat nap. He would literally lie down, sleep, his dresser would wake him up, get him going. He would just take a like shutdown, which is brilliant. And the rest of us, anytime anybody was leaving a show, we'd have like our happy trails, you know, at intermission. And so we were doing happy trails for myself and my friend Liz. And I said, you know, I saw this show in 1986 and I love Colm Wilkinson, and that's what got me into this, you know, production and how into the career. And I hear this voice behind me going, and who was the lead in that production? Worst accent ever. And I was like, oh my God. And Colm was there. He had foregone his nap to come say goodbye to us. And it was like, just, he was incredible. He still is incredible. He's an incredible man and actor. Anyway.
He was great in that show. You know, one of my stories is seeing the original at the Kennedy Center.
Yes.
When I was pretty young. Mm-hmm. And then same thing. We ended up randomly because they were canceling shows throughout the whole run because the turntable wasn't working. And we went back once and we were there and we had to leave halfway through. I Dreamed a Dream.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's so funny. I was listening to a podcast. This is probably only 6 years ago. Why am I blanking on who played the original Fontaine?
Francis Ruffin. Oh, no. Eponine or Fontaine?
Fontaine.
Oh, God.
I know.
Patty did it.
Patty did it in London, and then on Broadway it was... it'll hit
so
me
bad.
As we're talking.
Okay, we're horrible musical theater. Horrible.
She was on this podcast, and she was talking about the night she was on stage, mm-hmm. and that she was told that she was in the middle of I Dreamed a Dream. Like, isn't she like on the floor?
Yeah, she's on her knees,
the edge of the stage. And the orchestra stopped, and then the stage manager was signaling
like,
her,
get off stage.
And she talked about like, you know, having to stand up and leave the stage.
Oh, no.
And we all went out to the lobby and we're like saying, sorry, this is going to be canceled, blah, blah, blah. But it was so weird when she told that story because I was like, I was in the audience that night when that happened. And
That's
then we
crazy.
Ended up coming back and someone put us in box seats. And
those
two like, you know, young boys like, wow.
Right,
so
that's
just, yeah. And he was absolutely
incredible. He's just amazing.
Incredible with that.
Yeah.
So you know, you're all around, you're on tour, you're on Broadway with that. Did you know, did you keep in touch with Vinnie Liff again?
I kept in touch with Vinnie, and I became good friends with a couple of the other casting directors in his company. But then I lost touch with him just because I was sort of on my own journey and didn't really... I mean, we were connected through people, but not like personally so much. So, but I was, he had a crazy outpouring of people just showing him love when he passed. It was
early.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He was like our little Broadway angel. Are you going to talk about
my husband just told me Randy Graff.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew, for texting the name Randy Graff.
Oh, Randy Graff.
Randy Graff. That was it. Original Fontaine.
Speaking of Andrew, are we going to talk about Mamma Mia?
Yes. We can talk about our Mamma Mia. Oh my gosh.
Because I did that tour for 3 years.
Yep.
Which was, I did
we were on the road. Yeah. I was on the road for 3 years. Andrew did five.
Yeah.
As the dance captain. And dance captain and also putting everybody in the show.
Yes.
So we just got... He was always busy. Like, we were kind of like, going to see the city. We're going on out.
Like, and Andrew's like,
I have rehearsal.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry.
Right. He put us all into the show.
Sorry, honey. Yes, yes. Absolutely. When did you... So wait a minute. When did you move to... Because I know you went to L.A. Because I feel like you were in L.A.
I went to L.A. after 9/11. So 9/11 happened, and I stayed in New York about 9 months, sort of out of solidarity to New York.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know what? I want to try L.A. and see how that is. And I went to L.A. for a year. That was right before, or a year and a half, right before Mamma Mia.
Okay.
And it just was... It sucked. It was like... it just was hard. It was very different. The TV thing out there was very TV film thing was a very different vibe than LA is a different vibe than New York, period. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful place, but it was just very different and hard for me. And I never kind of grooved with it and was very happy when TV started happening in New York.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, great. Let's just do this here. But so I was there for like a year and a half, and then Tara Rubin called and was like, hey, do you want to come audition for Mamma Mia for the tour? And I was like, yes, I do.
So you were...
I was in LA.
You were in LA. That's where I was in LA too when I got. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So that's when I left LA and then went on the tour when we toured through California. I got the rest of my stuff out of my apartment. I had been just subletting it and like boxed it up and put it in storage again. Like the life of the actor, everything's in storage. And then after Mamma Mia, I bought my apartment in New York.
Up in Washington Heights. That's true. Yeah, LA was really different because I was out there too, and it was because the difference is in New York you can mostly go to all the auditions.
Mm-hmm.
In LA you had to have like a top agent to even get in there.
So I found it was very hard to even get an agent, and very, you know, and I've had a lot of agents in New York and one for a long time now who's fabulous, and it just felt like a different kind of game in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to waste any time with it.
Yeah.
I was like, I am not at that point. I was in my young 30s and I was like, I'm not what LA is like really focused on right now. So I want to get back to New York.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. Same. Yeah. I was ready to go too, which was good. Mm. One of my favorite shows. You were in one of my favorite shows that I remember I auditioned for when I first moved to LA, Ragtime. When did Ragtime come in and what was that like, the Ragtime musical?
So Ragtime was right after, so I finished Les Mis. I was subbing in for somebody for the Broadway company. So I wasn't a permanent cast member for that company. and I auditioned for Cats and booked the tour of Cats as a Grisabella cover and a pit singer. And Tony Roberts, who of like Woody Allen fame, who is my friend's dad, was like, "Meh, you don't want to go on that tour." He's like, stay in New York. And I said, okay. And he's like, really? He goes, I said, so I can turn this down? And he was like, yeah. So I turned it down. I stayed. And then I auditioned for Ragtime and I got the Ragtime tour, which I was thrilled about because Maren Mazzie was always one of my like huge, you know, just obsessed with her.
Yes.
And so anyway, I ended up going out on the road with Ragtime with that beautiful story and that beautiful music, which I think should be like mandatory for every high school to do.
I agree.
Everywhere.
Absolutely.
It's the story of our country and it's a conversation we're still having and needing to have. And it's stunning. So I did Les Mis first, then the Ragtime tour, then Mamma Mia tour, then Billy Elliot. Or no, then I did Tale of Two Cities on Broadway.
Right.
And then I did Billy Elliot in Chicago and in Toronto for
another one of my favorites. Yeah.
And then Kinky Boots for a year and a half.
And I saw you in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I was visiting my family then.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Maren Mazie, the late Maren Mazie, yes. Who was fantastic. I remember seeing her in Passion when I was in college.
Oh, God, I'm so jealous.
Oh, she's just great. Yeah, wonderful. You were a standby for Maren
Mazie. I was her standby in Carrie.
At MCC, Manhattan Class Company. I think so. Yeah, it's just MCC, something MCC. Like that. Yeah. People don't do Carrie that much.
No, I mean, that's a rough show. It's kind of a favorite with some of the younger generation because it is really just in your face and raw and everything, but it's tough. It's dealing with a lot of bullying. It's dealing with a lot of pain, a lot of mean girl syndrome and everything. And it's tough. I think it's important, but it's not, it's like not Sister Act in that way. Like Sister Act just like brings you a lot of sort of automatic joy while still addressing some of the same
issues. Much like Mama.
Carrie's a little bit like if you want a deeper dive into a dark place. And it can have a great outcome in terms of the theatrical experience you have, but it's hard. It's a hard show to do, but it was stunning. We had an incredible company. We were off Broadway. We had Maren as our Margaret, and Carmen Cusack was the teacher, and we just had this and a wonderful, wonderful ensemble. And so I got to sit and watch these people do incredible things, and I got to go on with Maren once when Carmen called out once, which was fabulous because Alan Rickman was in the audience because he's good friends with Maren.
Really?
And I'm on as Carmen's, as the character, and I said some line that got a laugh, and I heard this like, and I was like, I just heard Snape laughing in the audience. And I ran to Maren and I said, is Alan Rickman here? And she was like, yes. And she had this huge little like grin and I just died because, you know, Alan Rickman, another fabulous, incredible human. Yeah, so,
You'll never forget that. That's incredible. And she, because they did a recording of that. Isn't there a recording?
Yes, there is a recording.
She's
did a recording.
So good on that recording.
She's incredible.
It's a different part of, it's a different use of her voice.
You're talking about Carmen now?
No, I'm talking about,
or Maren.
Sorry, Maren.
Yeah. She's incredible. Both Carmen and Maren. Yeah.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I was standby for Cara Lee Carmelo in the downtown Teeny Sweeney, the immersive Sweeney that we did.
It was the Bear Group.
Right. And we did it in they recreated a actual bake shop, and you could go and have your pies, and the whole company walked through the whole little space and did the show like standing on tables and in people's faces. It was fantastic. It was phenomenal. So I was Carly's standby for that, and I actually got to go on.
You got to go on, too.
Yeah.
Oh, that is fantastic. We got to take another break pretty soon, but what would you say, rewarding, challenging role that you've played?
Oh, God, Diana in Next to Normal.
Oh, okay, sure.
And Mrs. Lovett.
Did you do that
at the Fulton. That was Paige Price, fabulous director that was an incredible very, very difficult role. One I would love to do again, but I think you have to space them about like time-wise because it's just so, it's so draining. Depressing and draining. Oh, it's tough. It's like doing Les Mis every night. It's hard. So, but an incredibly rewarding role and lovely, beautiful music and a great, hard story to tell.
You got to get into it. Yeah, I remember seeing that with Andrew. That's probably the one show where we had to sit in our seats for probably a good 10, 15 minutes after the show because you couldn't move.
And you're cracking up and weeping. It's like very hard. Yeah.
But that's a great role.
That's a good one.
That's a great role too.
Yeah.
We are going to be right back with the fabulous Ann Tolpagan right after this break. And welcome back to Show People. I am here with the lovely Ann Tolpagan, who is starring as the Mother Superior in Sister Act at Starlight, closing tomorrow evening. And I got to see it last night with our 5.5-year-old who stayed up till 11:15.
He was a trooper.
Like that last like 20 minutes of the show, he was running up and down the seats. And we're like, okay, hold on. I'm picking him up. And he's like, I don't want to be picked up. And he's like dancing. He's a little wackadoo, a little drunk with exhaustion, but loved it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Loved it. It was actually his first Starlight.
Was it really? First
Starlight Theater experience. Mm. How is it back? Because I think you told me earlier this is your first.
This is my first show back in 3
COVID.
Years. Mm. Yes, crazy.
Yeah.
All I do, I sit on that stage, especially I'm in the first scene of Act 2, so I have to place myself before the curtain comes up. And I sit there and I just throw out gratitude to the universe. I cannot believe how lucky I am to be sitting there just to be able to sing again. And again, it's Alan Menken, so it's this gorgeous, lush music. And I just sit there saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, over and over. I think this pandemic has been so hard for people, for everyone, obviously, but for performers, it just stripped us immediately of our craft.
Everything.
And it's not the same to do a Zoom show as it is to do it in person. And so it's been lovely coming back, and really just incredible. And we just are, I'm trying to stay as present as possible in every second of the show. You know, even if I go to the white room in a show, which for those of you who don't know, that's when you forget a lyric or a line and you're like, beep, like flatlining on the stage. Even then I'm like, huh, I'm still like on the stage, like having a good time. So, yeah.
It's weird, you know, I started hosting at this towards the beginning of kind of the COVID shutdown. So I've been talking to artists mostly on Zoom because I've been talking to people in New York and LA and everywhere. And it's everybody's having their experience, and it's actually been pretty emotional talking to people. People have moments because
it is very emotional.
We're, and especially then versus even now, I mean, we're still, you know, still it kind of working our way up.
But, I mean, I'm not, this is so blah that I don't even want to get into it, but we test like every other day. It's very important for our community to stay sort of in a bubble of health, because if we get, I think our union rules, if there are more than five people or three people who have COVID, you've just shut the production down for like 7 days. So this is, it's happened on Broadway a couple times. Shows have had to stop for a bit, for like a week. And then you see with shows like, you know, that you hear about with like Hugh Jackman on Music Man or something, he's had COVID a couple times. And this, our fabulous, incredible swings are like going in and doing their jobs. And it really is highlighting their incredible work, which is amazing. But it's hard. We have to keep, we're still sort of, we have this shadow of COVID over our head. All performers have to kind of really be smart about it.
It's so contagious right now. So it's like, you're kind of just, you know, getting it so easily, but welcome back. Congratulations. Welcome back with this fantastic role with coming out of COVID. It's a great one for you.
Yeah, so, thanks.
So you got married end of last year, wasn't it? End of like towards the end of fall.
Yes, it was October of 2021. And we met doing Sweeney Todd at Pioneer Theater in Salt Lake City.
Which was this after the Bear Group? Was this?
Yes, it was almost directly after. Okay. Yeah, which was fun because I already knew the role. Right, so I was like, but because Mrs. Lovett is a mouthful. That's a lot. That's a big role to learn. But we, I had gone to Pioneer. I had just been hiking down in South Utah. Beautiful. And I went up and we met the whole company and everything. And this very handsome young man is sitting next to me. And he says, we pass around at the start of a show, like the a union sheet saying, sign your name that you're agreeing to elect a certain company member to be our sort of representative with the union. Right. And so he was, we all sign it and then it's done. That's our paperwork for this thing. And he goes, can you show me where to sign my name on here? And I was like, yeah, dude, here, like pointed to his name. And I was like, this one, he's a live wire. Like, you know, here we go. Meanwhile, I find out 2 full days later that he's actually legally blind. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm such a beep.
Sorry.
You know, right. And, but our set had a huge hole in it, in the ground, because we had these fabulous grinding wheels that we had this incredible set, an incredible team at Pioneer put this together. And I'm like, how is Blake, my husband, how's Blake going to walk around the stage and not fall into this huge pit? And Blake was like, oh yeah, I got it. He's like, I'll just follow, like, I'll see when we do the walk around, I'll see where it is, because he has some vision.
Okay, yeah.
So he's not completely blind. He has some vision. But he's like, I'll see where it is, and then I'll go off of where the other actors are, which made everyone else in the whole company have to, like, rise up to a certain level.
Wow, yes.
So you're no longer just responsible for your own performance. You're now responsible for another human being not falling into a pit, you know? Mm-hmm, so he's just an added bonus to any show, because it makes everybody raise up their game. But so we met in that show. We were there for about 6 weeks. The whole time we were not like, falling in something, but we didn't know it. We were just professionally working together. All I kept thinking was, whatever Blake's doing, I want to do. Like, he's fun. I want to hang out with him. And he was having the same experience. And then the very last night of our show, we sort of were like, hey, do you want to like hang out in New York?
How long was the run?
The run was 6 weeks. I mean, okay, it was a quick regional.
Okay.
So not as quick as this one, but, right. But a quick regional. And I ended up going on a little vacation. And when we came back, we started dating. And then he moved in a year later and then proposed a year after that. And then we got married a year after that. So it was like 4 years total that we've been together.
Do you think similar sense of humor? I mean, was he playing opposite thing. You? I can't remember.
He's a solid 20 years younger than I am.
Great.
So you're welcome.
Excellent.
So, right. Sorry, what was the question you asked me?
Oh, was there something? What was that something?
Oh,
like
I
same
don't know.
Sense of humor?
No, yes, definitely same sense of humor. We just really, we call each other puzzle pieces because we're different with a lot of things, but we just fit together really well. Mm-hmm. And we sort of answer each other's call kind of thing. I don't know, we just wanted to hang out. He's incredibly talented, which is obviously something that I am attracted to, and very smart and so kind and funny and wonderful. And so anyway, he and I got together, and when he moved in with me, then we were, you know, really serious. And this is one of the wonderful things about the pandemic for us. A silver lining was that I ended up spending about 3.5 months at his mom's house. He has two moms.
Okay, yeah.
And so we lived with them in near outside of Pittsburgh for like 4 months, and I got to know them really well. And then we went and stayed with my mom for about 4 months and got to know, and Blake got to know her really well, which is incredible.
Which I'm so happy about.
Me
that.
Too.
I'm so happy
so that she got to know him really well.
And was there for your wedding.
And she was there at our wedding and everything.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, and Blake, some of our listeners, if you watch This Is Us, he's on This Is Us. He plays Jack Jr., which is all I'll say in case you haven't seen the show. But he plays Jack Jr., and he had a really wonderful time, which was very exciting for him because he's legally blind. Telsey Casting was asking, and the production team was asking for somebody who was actually blind to representing casting, right? To be like an actual blind person playing a blind role instead of getting somebody who is fully sighted to pretend to be a blind person, which has been done lovely in the past and everything, but they're really trying to go towards representation as strongly as possible. So Blake was thrilled to step into that part.
Did he have an agent that helped get that? Did you already say that? Wait, did you say
his, his manager?
His
yeah,
manager.
His
okay,
manager
great.
Helped him at the time with that, and we got he was at Aspen Theater, and we did a self tape and we sent it in, and they were like, okay, we want to do a callback, whatever. He ended up having to leave Aspen to go start doing production on This Is Us.
That was pretty recent, wasn't it?
Two years ago?
Oh,
wait,
gosh.
No, 3 years ago now?
Oh, okay.
2019.
Okay. No, yeah.
He finished his last taping right before they had a huge This Is Us closing party in March of 2020. And we flew from like a 2,000 person party to Pennsylvania to see his mom's. And then everything started falling apart. And I said, okay, we have 8 days to see if we have COVID now. Like, we're going to see. So anyway, that's when we stayed in Pennsylvania instead of going back to New York, because that's when everything was shutting down. We both had gigs and we both had our agents saying, don't come, don't be back. It's all ending. Like, so anyway, then we stayed in Pennsylvania for a while and did all our Zoom theater things and all of that. But he's a lovely, lovely guy. And he just did Secret Garden in Sacramento, and he's now at Goodspeed doing 42nd Street.
Right.
He's gonna be Billy.
Which is why he probably can't. So he probably didn't get a chance to see you in Pittsburgh either.
He didn't,
because
we missed
so
each other's
busy.
Shows. Yeah. But that's going to be a great production too. They're sort of reimagining 42nd Street. I think they're going to, well, I can't speak to it too much, but they're reimagining things to shake a little bit of the like stereotypes out of it.
Good.
So it'll be fun. To see.
That would be a good thing to do with 42nd Street.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh.
And I believe, if I'm not wrong, I believe next year is the 42nd anniversary of when 42nd Street first premiered.
Oh.
So it's sort of, they're trying to do some timing stuff.
They'll
it,
make
fun.
A little something.
Yeah. Like
that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to meet him.
Yeah, me too.
We're gonna
me too.
Get out to New York at some point. You live in
good.
Our old hood up in Hudson
I
Heights.
Know.
So yeah, at least
it's
for right now.
It's still gorgeous up there, yeah.
It's
hilly, in case people don't know that. We call it upstate Manhattan.
Upstate Manhattan.
Is hilly up there. It sort of mirrors the Palisades of New Jersey going up from the base of Manhattan. So where we are in Bennett Park up there, that's the highest point of Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's like the most quiet part
it
of Manhattan,
is also,
if you're going to
yeah,
have like the most
yeah.
like them. All right, I'm going to do something for the first time. I'm going to do a little speed round set of questions.
Oh, God.
A role you would like to play that you haven't played.
Bright Star. I want to do the Bright Star part, or I would love to do Bridges of Madison County.
Great.
Both of those.
Perfect. Yep. A country you have not visited that you would like to?
Anywhere in Africa.
Ah, okay.
100%.
A country you want to return to and why?
Ireland, my people. my people. Ireland. Love Ireland. Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Favorite dessert?
Chocolate brownie.
Mm. A record that you scratched up listening to?
Okay, this is Olivia Newton-John, Totally Hot. I had four versions of that album. I warped them all. I listened to them all. R.I.P., rest in power, Princess. She was incredible. And yeah, Totally Hot.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Favorite cast album of all time?
Oh gosh, it might be the Australian Jesus Christ Superstar or the original, the OG Les Mis. You know, or the original London Chess. People, please, if you like Chess, if you like ABBA, go listen to the London version of Chess. Yeah.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
A future dream with Blake.
Children. Yeah. Children.
Yay. Excellent.
And
excellent.
A house.
And a house.
And a house.
You're thinking about that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. 800 square feet is hard with dogs and blind people and... maybe kids.
Yes. Well, it's so interesting with COVID. Everybody did move out of New York.
Yeah.
And moved in with their parents
right,
back. And you kind of were like, yeah, if you didn't already, you know, you want to get out of New York.
We'd like to stay close to New York City because it's where we work and it's very important to us. But we would like a little more space in a garden.
There's a lot of places even in upstate New York.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably, I wonder if that's more affordable than Jersey. I remember there's people, everyone's moving to Jersey, but Jersey's expensive too.
All the suburbs are expensive now though, because everybody went out there, but I think it's all shifting. So we'll just see where the adventure takes us and we'll figure it out. We have some good friends who are realtors now, so we're going to work with them and figure out where we go.
Great. Yeah. I want to have Blake on the show, so I'll reach out.
I would love, I'm sure Blake would love to be on the show and talk about microphones and podcasts.
He will have those right there. Is there a show that you'd like to do with Blake? Did you like the roles that you'd like to play together?
You know, we've talked about that a little bit. We could potentially do Next to Normal, maybe, but that would be a little weird playing his mom. Mm. we'll look around and see what shows we want to do, but we haven't. I think maybe Weekend in the Country or
Little Light Music,
You know, maybe Sondheim stuff. We could probably.
Oh, that'd be great.
Continue on that route. Yeah.
Great. this has been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So excited to see you. I'm so excited we got to see you in Sister Act.
Me too.
So
thank
huge
you.
Thank you for being on the show. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate.
And I'll see you next month, Kate.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on Show People.
Yeah. Bye.